free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online to see our call-in numbers at freeenergynow.net, see our past shows, and catch the archives of those, as well as seeing who our future guest lineup is. Our guest today is David Wenbert. He is the founder and executive director of the H2 Earth Institute and has been involved with advanced research for more than 20 years, energy research. H2 Earth Institute is in process of replicating the water fuel cell technology to late Stanley Myers, who ran vehicles on water and whose patents have just now become public domain. Mr. Wenbert is now in the Washington, D.C. area and is developing the H2 Earth Institute and a companion trade association for the emerging water fuel industry. In particular, he has a theory or concept that these over-unity electric systems have a tight correlation to the over-unity electrolysis systems that are being observed that he's been involved in founding. Welcome to the show, David. Glad to have you on.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, we've chatted a lot via Skype. This is the first time that you and I have spoken by over a live line. That's an interesting phenomenon when we've known each other for quite a while.
Yeah, it's a strange new world.
Yeah, it is. Well, I've been looking forward to this interview. It's a very fascinating subject. You know, we're just about done with a little video snippet that we've pulled together here at PES Network about water fuel cells. And kind of the gist of that is that there are a lot of independent researchers, hobbyists around the planet. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people have replicated what appear to be over-unity electrolysis scenarios where they're getting more energy out than what traditional electrolysis equations would say is possible. And apparently there may be some tapping into zero-point energy, some other energy source in the process. And you're saying that this over-unity observed in electrolysis, and you've been heavy involved in an open-source project to publish plans of how to do these things, the Stanley Myers plans and others, and facilitating this massive proliferation of the replications of this effect. But you're saying that this is quite similar to what's going on with the over-unity electromagnetic systems.
Yes. The Hearth Institute has formed a group of over 60 research associates in 16 countries around the world. These researchers have all been replicating the Stan-Meyer water fuel cell, the patents on which expired June 26th. We've had a number of successes. Our members have been producing gas at down at 1.5 watt-hours per liter and down below that, 0.38 watt-hours per liter. Anything below 2.4 watt-hours per liter is over unity.
According to Faraday's equations, right?
Yes. And the water fuel cell is a lot more complex than it seems. There are many processes going on within it at the same time. Many people have been confused by the way Stan Meyer referred to the use of resonance as the mechanism that splits the water. It's not a molecular resonance in the way most physicists would or chemists would refer to it. It's more of an electrical resonance between the resonant charging choke coils on either side of the water fuel cell in the circuit. And we found that the way those coils interact is virtually identical to the way the coils in Tom Bearden's motionless electromagnetic generator interact. And we've we've traced this further, and it appears pretty conclusive that the electrodynamics that are happening within the water fuel cell in Stan-Meyer's circuit are the same that are observed in not only Bearden's, but Joseph Newman's energy machine, John Bedini's motors. It's all the same. And the sooner we realize that and begin to extrapolate from that point, the sooner that practical free energy technology is going to be available.
Now, of course, none of what you just said is going to be acknowledged or even looked at by academia for yet some time, which is very unfortunate. But here we have, how many people would you say have replicated the over-unity electrolysis situation? Just a guess.
Oh, God. Well, beyond the 60 or so that we're working with full-time, we have a real-time collaboration system using the Skype platform. But there are hundreds around the world, or thousands. With the advent of YouTube, I think more people have been able to see this stuff and get into it and start working with it on a hobby basis, not just the water fuel cell, but the Joseph Newman machine and the Bedini motor and all of these. And all of a sudden on YouTube, you're seeing an explosion of, you know, hundreds and hundreds of videos of people who are trying these things. Now, they don't all get it right, and there are a lot of subtleties in, you know, in the design and operation that have to be learned and observed to make it work. But I think we're on an exponential acceleration curve in the development of these things, where it's inevitable that these devices are going to be perfected and reliable and widely available in very short order.
For the sake of those who are sitting at their computers listening to this right now or through the archives, let's give out your website domain name.
It's actually pronounced Hearth. The Hearth Institute is h2earth.org.
And that's the letter H, the number 2, and then earth.org.
.org, yeah. And we're also setting up a trade association for companies that get involved in what we believe will be an emerging water fuel industry. And that's at h2earth.com.
Okay.
And that's the Hydroxy Energy Association.
Uh-huh. Very good. Now, you actually, one thing I didn't mention in the introduction is you have quite a bit of experience in the trade world. You've were a former stockbroker, mortgage broker, arranged, negotiated, and participated in mergers, acquisitions, leveraged buyouts, venture capital placement, initial public offerings, in the alternative energy, aerospace, telecommunications, healthcare, and information technology sectors. You've also been a consulting business partner, worked with a variety of research inventors and their exotic technologies, bringing them together with professional scientists and university resources to bridge the gaps which often separate new ideas from funding. So you've got your feet plenty wet in the area of this, you know, bringing things to market. So sounds like you're an ideal person to help bring these technologies into a usable area.
Well, I think that the field is reaching a point at which it's mature. The technology is about to be mature enough that that it can look at going to market as products for the average consumer. I've been watching this field for 30 years, and we went from back in the 70s when we had a variety of independent inventors that a lot of people took for kooks and crackpots, and then over the 80s and 90s it slowly became more professional, and connections between these technologies began to emerge. Dr. Peter Lindemann, I think, made a major contribution to this field with his book, The Free Energy Secrets of Cold Electricity, in which it's really a detective story where he went back and found the connections between original work by Nikola Tesla which had nothing to do with Tesla's other, you know, more well-known contributions like AC current and so forth. But some of Tesla's lab notes referring to radiant energy and electroradiant events that were anomalous and didn't fit in with any of the rest of electrical theory, but were reproducible. And Dr. Lindemann then traced that to the work of E.V. Gray and the Gray motor, which definitely employed the same mechanism. And then traced that further to Stan Myers and the water fuel cell. And the more we look at Joe Newman and John Bedini and you know, 100 other inventors out there, it's the same circuit. It's doing the same thing. These are not different devices. And you know, Dr. Lindemann and Tom Bearden, in his book Energy from the Vacuum, I think just in the last few years, are really bringing this together to coalesce at a point where industry can, you know, pick up this technology and begin turning it into product.
At the recent Extraordinary Technology Conference by Tesla Tech in Salt Lake City, July 26th or 29th, and this is the year 2007 for people who are years ahead of us, listening back years behind. Anyway, Peter Lindemann was there with a demonstration of a number of circuits that he's come up with that are actually very similar to the Bedini circuits, but don't involve the Bedini patent, and he plans, or he actually has published those, and that's a story I've been sitting on, need to get around to, been procrastinating a little bit because it's hard work to pull together something like that in a comprehensible way. But he has done seminal work in showing some very amazing electrical phenomena that go far outside what classical physics describes in their textbooks, and which can make motors so much more efficient, so you're not fighting the back EMF, you can actually use the back EMF and get more mechanical output from your motor using much less energy. And he has not published a complete set of plans about how to build an over-unity motor, but he says if you piece together what he has out there, you can do it. He's just not going to tell you how to do it.
Yes, he believes that the market isn't really ready for such a product yet. That because of the attitude in academia and so on, that the skepticism is all pervasive, and that you couldn't just come right out with a free energy product. I personally disagree with that. I think that when you look at the dire situation that the world is in today, between runaway global warming, impending peak oil, and you know, wars over oil and petroterrorism, you know, we're looking at the three horsemen of the apocalypse, and the one thing that can defuse that or unravel that convergence of peak oil, petroterrorism, and global warming is to render petroleum obsolete. And that's what got me involved with the water fuel cell. And frankly, we're looking at other water fuel technologies as well. But the water fuel cell seems to be the winner. And it has the advantage that the patents have expired and the technology is in the public domain.
Mm-hmm. I should mention that I, together with Dave Wenbert, pulled together a page at PezWiki about this, and I created a shortcut URL, which is watercell.info. That's watercell.info. And that was a page that Dave actually pulled together for us, and has been keeping updated with links to his website and other resources, discussion groups, YouTube forums, where you can go and participate in this collaborative effort to increase the number of replications, to increase the accuracy, the performance of these systems, to kind of drill down. And your objective, if I understand right now, is to come up with a demonstration unit that is basically undeniable.
Exactly. We call it the IDU, or Irrefutable Demonstration Unit, and it will consist of a 3-kilowatt portable generator, just an off-the-shelf, Honda generator, running itself on a water fuel cell. And the water fuel cell will be plugged into the 12-volt 10-amp DC auxiliary circuit, so that it won't even be running off the AC. We should be at that point in the next few months. It's just a question of building a final cell that incorporates everything that we've learned so far. Our findings to date are generally posted on that page, watercell.info. And if you look at the bottom of that page, there is a graphic showing the input waveform that the water fuel cell requires from Stanmeyer. And above that, some oscilloscope tracings of the output waveform of the Joseph Newman Energy machine. And you can see at a glance that they're virtually identical.
Yeah.
Now, anyway, that was the first clue, but since then we found several others. For example, if you go to, Tom Bearden's book, Energy from the Vacuum, on page 401, there is a diagram of the MAG coil assembly, figure 7.5 on page 401. Well, that image is virtually identical to the voltage intensifier circuit in Stan Meyer's documents.
Hmm.
Now, I don't think the word water appears anywhere in the 900-page book by Tom Bearden. And I don't know that he ever talked to Meyer at all. And Stan Meyer didn't have the benefit of the work that Tom Bearden has done over the last 10 years in analyzing free energy. But they still seem to have arrived at the same conclusion.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Do you have somewhere an itemization of the similarities, kind of an articulation of this concept, the similarities between the electrolysis over unity and the electromagnetic over unity?
Not yet. That's the next step. That's why I haven't updated our website in a while, because this emerging understanding has been unfolding, and we've been trying to figure out what's the best way to present it. Various things like the Tesla switch are also public domain technology. And we believe that at some point a master design can come together that incorporates this into one practical device. The bottom line with the water fuel cell is it really is a fuel cell. It's not a misnomer. You just add water, you expose it to the universe in the form of that radiant energy pulse, and it gives you electricity, and you get combustible gas out as a byproduct.
And you have enough energy to keep the system running, plus you have energy left over to use for, in other words, it can serve as a primary energy generator.
Yes. The properly constructed, according to what we know now, the water fuel cell will consume no current. It will produce net current. What's actually happening there is you're achieving dielectric breakdown in the water over and over again, doing it with voltage. You're not allowing any current to enter the cell. When the voltage spike grows to a certain magnitude, it forces dielectric breakdown. No current is entering from the cathode, which Meyer's cathodes were insulated, by the way. The electrons are ripped from the water to fill the holes in the anode. And as you pull electrons out of water, water molecules break down. First you have ionization when they lose one electron, and then you have dissociation when they lose two electrons. And that's what happens in the water fuel cell over and over again. And all those electrons build up, and they are drawn off by what Meyer called the electron extraction circuit. And so you're getting DC current out of a water fuel cell on that electron extraction circuit in direct proportion to how much gas you produce. Yeah, if you want more gas, fix it so it pulls out more current, or vice versa.
Now, how does this compare to the Tesla radiant energy circuit?
Well, I'll tell you, the simplest depiction of all of this is in a document that was released on July 27th by Patrick Kelly. Patrick Kelly, as you know, is the editor of the Practical Guide to Free Energy Devices, which is now hosted at panaceauniversity.org. And his document, number D3, and it's easy to find on panaceauniversity.org, that document goes into various similarities between the Bedini motor, the Tesla switch, and a patent by Harold Aspin, the British physicist. On pages 25 to 36 of that D3 document, you see a walkthrough of this Tesla switch, which John Bedini first presented at the Tesla Centennial Symposium in 1984. But you'll see diagrams there that show just how this Tesla switch circuit works between four batteries, keeping the batteries charged while you draw off a load. The more load you draw off, the faster the batteries charge. It's completely the opposite to a normal electrical circuit. It depends on the switching. But that is the single simplest embodiment of the same principle. And what's going on in that Tesla switch, which is just a handful of transistors and capacitors, what's going on in that Tesla switch is the same thing we're seeing in the motor fuel cell. It's what Joe Newman's motor does. It's what John Bedini's motors do. It's what the MEG does in the final analysis. Now, Joe Newman uses what is, in effect, a rotary mechanical switch, his commutator. And Newman's commutator is the secret to the Newman energy machine. The coils and the magnets are amplifiers. That's not where the magic happens. It's happening in the switch.
Is that the way he sees it?
No. No, but it's, the evidence that is that his system is behaving exactly like Bedini's and exactly like these other things. It's charging the batteries in the same way with some of the same anomalies. And all the phenomenology suggests that it's the same thing. Now, it's also true that commutator is probably a better way of doing this than transistors and the other discrete modern electronic components. There are certain things about this energy flow that may be difficult for elements like MOSFETs and so on to accommodate.
So the transistor in Bedini circuit is the equivalent of the commutator in Newman circuit?
Yes.
And
yes.
Peter Lindemann's circuit also has a transistor. It's really quite nifty how he's redesigned that circuit to accomplish the same thing, but outside of the Bedini patent, so it's more of an open source type of beast than what Bedini's is, where there's a patent protection. And
exactly. Part of the thing that's kept this technology bottled up over the years is the inventor mentality. The process of inventing and patenting, and the way you would go about forming a company or raising money traditionally in other businesses requires that you obtain patent protection. That's the thing that investors or venture capitalists will want to see. But it's really not the way to go in free energy, because that prevents devices from being replicated and prevents anyone from really analyzing it in a way that that they would feel confident investing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's enough of this now in the public domain. You know, even the foreign patents that Joe Newman was awarded various countries under the Patent Cooperation Treaty in 1988, that patent has expired. So, with all due respect to Joe Newman, his technology is in the public domain, at least what he's exhibited so far.
Mm-hmm.
And Myers and the Tesla switch and so on. And from all this, it should be possible for anyone who's got the fabrication and assembly capability, to organize a practical device. And that's something that we're looking at right now.
I'm wondering, when we're talking about these technologies, you've not mentioned GEET, and GEET is not an electrolysis scenario. It's a plasma scenario where they're taking an engine and they're running the exhaust in one direction. The fuel comes in the opposite direction, heats up the fuel as it goes through there. There's some electrical stripping that goes on, apparently. The fuel goes in a special method and is burned very efficiently, very cleanly. Dennis...
You're thinking of Dennis Lee.
Yeah, Dennis Lee has that same technology that he got from Pantone. Do you see a similarity in that scenario to the electrolysis?
Well, I'll tell you, I spent a good deal of time involved in research on the GEET in Central Florida. We have we had half dozen PhDs involved in a project. We replicated the GEET and studied its phenomenology. And the GEET is definitely real. It can definitely be made to work. It is also much more complex than it seems. There's a lot going on there. And constructing a perfected version that is reliable is not necessarily cheap or easy. But it can be done. In working with the GEET, we found some very interesting things. We had, like I said, about a half dozen scientists there at the time the thing was operating, and with a magnetometer, we measured the magnetic field around the GEET at various distances, several feet across the room. And we found various patterns in this anomalous magnetic field that shouldn't have even been there in the first place as the thing operated. There was a null zone a couple feet from the device in which the magnetic flux suddenly dropped to zero at a certain radius from the tube, whereas it existed everywhere else in the room. There were a lot of metal objects and things, but the fact that it created this magnetic null zone, as well as its own field, it was just very bizarre. I mean, we had professors of electrical engineering in the room that just couldn't see how that should be happening.
Mm-hmm. What about the theory that's put forth by Moray King, who says that these electrolysis scenarios are somehow tapping into zero-point energy? The gas clusters on an atomic level are creating a self-organizing criticality that somehow gets the zero-point energy moving, and that's the true source of energy in these scenarios, not the water itself.
Yes. Like I said, the water fuel cell is complex. Not only does the circuit behave like like the Tesla switch or the MEG, but in the water itself, when that voltage spike is applied, but no current is allowed through it, that what is happening in the water is the same thing that's happening in the circuit. It's just happening all over again, and that appears to be where you get this ingression of energy from the vacuum. From the quantum vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
Stan Meyer, in one of his lectures, actually described it that way. He said, with that pulse, we're opening a door, and as long as we can keep that door open, the energy will continue to come in. But it's very hard to do, and you have to keep pulsing it, keep opening the door over and over again. Well, that's the same thing as the gray tube in E.V. Gray's motor. Same thing the Newman commutator is doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, in this process of harnessing zero-point energy or whatever cosmic energy is coming flowing into this as these doors are being opened, do you not think that calling this a water fuel cell is a misnomer, in as much as the true energy source is actually outside of the system, coming into the system because of the system?
Yes and no. I mean, at the simplest level, water fuel cell seems the best description. It's also been referred to as a water capacitor, although there are more mundane closed water capacitors for other purposes. I think that that as the understanding of these things comes together, and I'm talking just over the next, 3 to 6 months, you're going to see some, very reliable, replicable demonstrations that are going to make it irrefutable that the excess energy is real and that it's being used in these devices. And then grudgingly, you'll see the scientific establishment begin to start taking a more serious look at it.
It seems to me that the water fuel cell community is close to a point that the cold fusion community is at. There was a recent conference at MIT this month, I think it was on the 14th. This was published in Wired magazine, the story that I'm referring to, where they were saying that there have been some 3,000-plus refereed papers published about cold fusion, documenting that it exists, replications, its characteristics, and that the question is no longer does it exist and is it real. The question is, can we get the funding that is called for to commercialize this? Because it's going to be difficult to work through all the issues that are, the bugs and the that are going to be required to scale it to a commercial level.
Yes, but if we're right that the underlying phenomenology in the water fuel cell is the same as these other devices, Bearden, Bedini, Newman, then it puts a whole different spin on this. It gives us a very direct path to the perfected device, to perfecting all of these devices. And this is, in the scheme of things, pretty cheap research to do. I mean, a few $100s or a few $1,000s in parts, not, you don't need palladium rods and heavy water and neutron detectors and all this. I mean, cold fusion is cheap compared to hot fusion, but the water fuel cell and these radiant energy technologies are probably that much, again, cheaper.
So the water fuel cell is really the ideal open source technology to open to the community, to have a community collaborative development and advancement forward of the technology without having to go through the traditional routes of government funding, government support, large institutional support, get Detroit involved. That's not required. Let me go back to the situation you talked about earlier where you had a half a dozen PhDs studying the GEET, and it came down to it that the technology worked, but it was very complex and difficult to put into a stable configuration for a commercial application.
Exactly. I would say the GEET is on par with cold fusion in terms of the effort that would be required to perfect it, and the cost involved in doing individual experiments and so forth. I think it needs to be done and will be done, and the Horace Institute will probably take up the GEET at some point and do some of that work that we didn't get to 5 years ago when we were working on this in Florida. But the most practical device is going to be something along the lines of the water fuel cell, probably with a circuit more like the Tesla switch than Meyer's original. You have to remember, Stan Meyer died in 1998. In fact, it's coming up on the 10th anniversary of his death. He didn't have Tom Bearden's papers to go by.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have, virtually everything that's on the Internet now in the field of free energy didn't exist 10 years ago. And I think that by finding the keys to the phenomenology that we think we have now, the water fuel cell can be made simpler and more reliable. And ultimately, you won't need, for a home power system, for example, we were envisioning you'd have a water fuel cell, and then you'd take the gas and you'd run it through a microturbine, and the microturbine would generate electricity, and with the waste heat, you'd heat your water. And so you'd have a home power system not unlike, a Generac or, one of these things on the market today for backup power that you can buy at Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
Microturbine would be better than a piston engine for reliability reasons, but that's beside the point. Anyway, that's what we were looking at doing with the water fuel cell, was getting it to the point where it could be used for home power in that regard. But now, as we've studied it further, and the relationship to the electrical power that comes out of the cell in the electron extraction circuit, it could be a lot simpler than that. It could be a question of just having a battery bank like you would if you have the solar PV panels on your roof, where you have a dozen batteries or 20 batteries and an automatic transfer switch and an inverter and charge controller, voltage regulator. All this stuff is off the shelf in the solar industry. You'd have that same system, but there would be a water fuel cell, and the current thrown off by the water fuel cell would keep your batteries charged. And the batteries would go to a 12-volt inverter, it would convert it to 120-volt AC to run your home.
What are you doing with the gas?
Well, in that case, it's almost like the gas becomes irrelevant. You could use it in your HVAC system, an absorption chiller or something like that. In an automobile, it's just the opposite. There, you would use the gas with the internal combustion engine, and the fact that it's generating a lot of electric power, you'll make use of that in some way. Perhaps a hybrid vehicle is ideal for use with this.
So you've said it a number of times, but it apparently bears repeating. I had not appreciated that the water fuel cell is not only generating gas, the hydrogen and oxygen coming off of the broken bonds from the water, but you're saying it's also generating current.
Yes, as a matter of fact, one of the things that became apparent in our research is that you cannot neglect that that electron extraction circuit. You need to pull that current out of there because every electron that's left in the water is inhibiting ionization and dissociation from occurring. That's why the pulses are timed in such a way that they keep the current from entering the cell. And the cathode that the electrons would normally come out of is insulated in Delrin. Stan buried that in his documentation. It was hard to figure out he was doing that, but the sort of bounce back and the resonant effect is the primary factor keeping the current from entering, and the Delrin insulation prevents any leakage beyond that. But meanwhile, as a result of ionization and dissociation, you have this free electron current that arises in the solution. And the way the circuit works is when the high voltage pulse is off on the anode, the electron extraction circuit kicks in because the electrons can't all move through the water fast enough to get to the anode during the pulse. So the EEC draws off this free electron current, and you can power a light with it. We've had people use it to run motors and fans and pumps and so on. But it's very important because otherwise those electrons will build up and change the the nature of what's happening chemically and inhibit the process.
The question comes in when you talk about a home power system and you compare it to a microturbine, distributed energy type of microturbine, or a solar system using a battery bank. Price-wise, what are we talking about? Are we going to be competing with those prices of solar? Are we going to be competing with conventional energy? Are we going to be lower?
I think that if a home power system based on free energy, whether it's the Tesla switch or whether it's a version of that involving the water fuel cell, either way, you're going to be able to do for with a a little green box for $2,000 what you would otherwise need $20,000 worth of solar panels to do. Now, the balance of the system is all going to be pretty much the same, and we're fortunate that our friends in the solar industry have developed this to a high art, and there are, 1,000 installers around the country who put these things in every day. The battery bank and its associated electronics is now something you can buy out of a catalog from a dozen vendors. That wasn't the case way back in the 20th century.
What are you talking about in terms of the input of water? Of course, water is a precious commodity and becoming more so. How pure does the water need to be, and at what rate does it burn? You buy water from the grocery store at almost the same price as what you buy gasoline.
True. Now, remember, since the water is not actually being consumed here, there's no reason why the water fuel cell needs to be no reason why it needs to be open loop as far as the gas goes.
Mm-hmm.
You get your hydroxy gas out, you burn it in whatever type of engine, and then you're getting water vapor out the exhaust. Well, there's no reason why you can't condense that and reuse it. Your energy isn't coming from the water, as you pointed out. It's coming from the quantum vacuum. The U.S. Army already has a device which captures water vapor from motor vehicle exhaust while the vehicle is running without seriously impairing its performance.
Mm-hmm.
DARPA developed that. It's in use in Iraq right now, undergoing testing. And ultimately, they expect that a lot of Humvees and other military vehicles will be outfitted with. So, fortunately, that part's already been done.
In our video that we're putting out here in a couple of days, there's a little snippet showing Exogen Technologies, spelled XOGEN.com is their website. Or actually, I think it's
CA, I believe.
CA, yeah. They lost their .com. Anyway, they are claiming to use the technology not to produce gas, but to purify water.
Well, yes, and you can do that with high voltage in water. It doesn't mean that they have real water fuel technology, though,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately. There are a number of companies doing that sort of thing. We refer to it as exothermic plasma synthesis. They all have different trade names for it. You've got companies like StarTech, .net, and USMagnaGas.com, and there are a dozen others, and they use a high-voltage discharge underwater to produce combustible gas. But what they're doing is that's carbon-based. Most of them are using carbon or graphite electrodes, and the electrodes ablate, and you get COH2 out, carbon monoxide and hydrogen in a loose bind. And it is fairly clean and very efficient. But the graphite electrodes are expensive. That is a field that we're interested in, but that's not really the same thing as the water fuel cell per se.
Okay. So the idea that water fuel cells could be used to clean the water while also providing energy is a bit misplaced.
Well, no. I mean, one of the things that we've uncovered is that you can use any water in this thing. I mean, first, when we realized that Peter Lindemann was correct and that the dielectric breakdown of the water was the key, our people started all using distilled water and triple distilled water and, you know, isotopically pure water and so on. But that only matters if you're passing current through it.
Mm-hmm.
And we realized that, no, there is no current being introduced into the water fuel cell because the cathode is insulated.
Mm-hmm.
Then we realized Stan Meyer really was correct when he said you can use seawater. It doesn't matter. You know, you just adjust some of the parameters, but whether the water is, whatever its resistivity is or how conductive it is, it doesn't matter. You can still achieve dielectric breakdown if you drive it, you know, with enough voltage fast enough.
Now, how does this compare to the Brown's gas devices such as George Wiseman is producing?
Well, Stan Meyer and Newell Brown were contemporaries. They were rivals. Yeah, they were going around at the same time in the 70s and 80s promoting their technologies. There's conflicting evidence about whether the gas that comes out of the water fuel cell is really Brown's gas or whether it has the same unique properties as Brown's gas. That's going to take some spectroscopy to really get a handle on that, and we plan to do that in the future. Brown's gas machines typically operate at about 3 watt-hours per liter. With the water fuel cell, we're seeing at least twice as efficient and, yeah, ultimately, many times more efficient in producing the gas. Although studying Brown's gas has told us a lot about what is going on in the water fuel cell. Brown's gas is ionized. When a Brown's gas flame is impinging on something, it's transferring charge. That's what accounts for all the bizarre properties of Brown's gas.
Mm-hmm.
A normal flame, whether it's a torch or a candle or whatever, it's a plasma. All fire is plasma, but it's neutral. The total number of positive charges and negative charges are, you know, roughly equal in an ordinary flame. Not so in the Brown's gas. And that tells us that when you create this gas in an electrically asymmetrical fashion, you draw off the electrons, you start seeing unusual effects occur, and indeed that's the case.
Are you observing the similar effects to what Brown's gas is observing, where they, you can take a torch and you can wave it across your hand and it doesn't burn your hand, but you can then take that same torch, same setting, put it to tungsten, and it will sublimate it almost immediately?
Right, that's due to the fact that the flame is highly charged.
And you're seeing that same effect with the gas coming off the water fuel cell?
Well, we haven't been analyzing its combustion characteristics yet. We've been concentrating on gas production efficiency.
But surely some people have tried that.
We haven't really been looking at that at all. It's working with independent researchers and we're donating their time and buying the parts largely out of their own pocket so far. It's a little different as far as getting getting the same sort of goal focus objectives than if we had them all in the same building.
Mm-hmm.
In real space. There are a lot of experiments that we'd like to see done, we're going to need to generate some major funding to undertake them, and is something that we're going to look for after we have this irrefutable demonstration unit.
Do you have a method where people who are interested in investing can put up money?
No. We haven't been accepting any donations thus far. We've been wanting to get to that demonstration first, and then it's only at that point that I'd feel comfortable, accepting, donations in general.
I want to ask a couple more questions. We have about 5 minutes left in the show here. One question is the commercial end of it, your foundation, or I can't remember what you called it, the .com version of H2Earth or Hearth. The other is how does this relate to people who are using hydrogen injection systems into their air intake in a vehicle? They have an onboard electrolysis scenario, producing Brown's gas, which then goes into the air intake and increases the fuel efficiency and decreases the emissions.
Yes, those are, it can be generically referred to as hydroxy boosters
mm-hmm.
for cars, and there are, I think, more than 50 of them on the market, and have been, and there's more all the time, and people do seem to get incredible results with them. The Hydroxy Energy Association that they're putting together will hopefully serve as a trade association for all kinds of water fuel technology, not just the water fuel cell. And you've got out there companies that make Brown's gas welders. You've got companies that make these hydroxy boosters that are examples of water fuel technology that's in use today. There's a company in Korea that actually has a Brown's gas system that feeds into a roaster, and you can roast chickens on a commercial scale using Brown's gas. And they claim that that the meat cooks better and it's juicier and so forth. The Hydroxy Energy Association for Renewables in Transport and Homes, or Hearth, it will be based here in Washington, D.C., and it will represent the interests of the water of the new water fuel industry in the same way that the American Petroleum Institute represents oil companies or the gas Association for natural gas and coal industries represent their fields, and indeed 1,000 other industries that have trade associations.
You going
here to look out for
annual conferences?
Yes, yes.
When's your first?
we're talking with the Panacea Foundation in Australia about possibly doing a joint function with them at some point. It would be nice to do something in Hawaii, in collaboration with Panacea, and bring together water fuel researchers from the U.S. and Australia, which is where most of the effort seems to be concentrated worldwide. Although we do have some very active teams in South Africa and other countries around the world.
Europe seems to be quite active in this kind of research.
Less so than you would think. And to that extent, there seems to be more of it in Eastern Europe. We have members from Poland, Slovenia, Croatia, Romania. I think there's one from the Czech Republic. So far, we don't have anyone from France or Germany or the places you would expect.
I wanted to come back to this question about the hydroxy booster technology. Right now, let's say they're getting 40% is around the best number I've heard for the improvement in the mileage just by adding one of these electrolysis units to the engine, where they're drawing current from the battery, which, of course, is replenished by the alternator, and that current electrolyzes the water, which then goes into their intake for a net gain of 40% in the fuel efficiency.
Right. Now, one of our we have two members who are with manufacturers of those devices, one of them, Ozzy Friedman from I believe it's fuelforgas.com, if I remember correctly. He's found something very interesting. They analyzed the engine computers in late model cars
mm-hmm.
that control the ignition and the oxygen sensors and so forth. And he believes that there's evidence that these things have been rigged, have been deliberately programmed to defeat hydroxy boost devices and many kinds of fuel additives as well.
No doubt. You have to do some hoop jumping with some circuitry and whatnot to get around that. And George Wiseman has some of that circuitry that you can get.
True. But think about what he's saying. Not that these devices make it difficult, but that they are deliberately programmed to defeat the hydroxy boost.
Well,
if that's the case.
That's going to have to wait for another day. I really appreciate you joining us. This has been a fascinating interview. And you've been listening to the Free Energy Now show. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. We've been talking with David Wenberg, who is the founder and managing director of the Hearth Institute, who has both a open source water fuel cell project going as well as a commercial venture to come up with a practical device that can be introduced to the marketplace. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Dave.
Thank you very much.
Listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.